Welcome to the Classy Ring Attire Podcast, where we do our best to put some class into the world of wrestling. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And it's been the last Raw of the year. Last Raw of the year just went off.
Woo!
So that was it. That was 2000, I guess. Yeah. You still have SmackDown, but really, that was 2011 for WWE.
Put a fancy friggin' bow on it.
It's in the bag. All right. But as always, we'll start out with just a quick overview of what happened this week on Monday Night Raw. I guess kind of a big deal. They were in Chicago this week.
If you didn't notice.
Yeah. I mean, it's not always a big deal what city they're in, but Chicago loves them some Punk. And, I mean, it's the first time they've been back since Money in the Bank, so.
And it's just, it's interesting to see because a single city hasn't just wrapped themselves around a single wrestler like they have with CM Punk this past year. It just seems just unworldly, like not even when they were in New York or Long Island or whatever, just like this past pay-per-view, they cheered, yeah, for Zack Ryder, but they did not go anywhere near as nuts as they did for CM Punk.
Not like they did for Punk, no. I mean, Chicago turned him face.
Oh, definitely.
Like, that's, you know, and the power of a crowd to do that is, you know, amazing.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So they're back. CM Punk's music hits right at the top of the show, and John Laurinaitis comes out wearing a Punk t-shirt.
Oh, and breaking news, everyone. According to John Laurinaitis, he's now the executive vice president of Raw. I just, every week, he just finds one more new thing to screw up on.
Yeah.
He just falls over all of himself.
I'm still not sold on Laurinaitis. I like the idea of John Laurinaitis because I like the idea of a really, really terrible boss character trying to be hip and cool and with it, because that really is kind of what WWE is.
True. And in, like, WWE fashion, he's just completely awkward in doing so.
Yeah.
And it's just a train wreck to watch, which, again, is a great metaphor for WWE, because they've been doing that for decades.
Yeah. So, I'm not one of the ones who wants Laurinaitis gone and off my television, because it's kind of interesting to watch.
That's where we disagree. I cannot wait to get him off my TV.
I don't know.
I want someone better. I would rather have the Mike Adamley era back than this crap. Like, I can't stand him. I can't stand his stupid voice. I can't stand him falling all over himself, which is funny because every time I try to say that, I mess up saying it. And it's just, I'm tired of it, and I'm ready for someone more interesting and more fun to listen to. Like, good guy, bad guy, I don't care. I mean,
my biggest fear is they don't know where they're going with this, like they didn't with the anonymous GM.
And I really think they don't. And see, that's the biggest the biggest joke about Raw is they have all these GM storylines that they've had over the years, and none of them have any kind of direction or any kind of ending in sight, and it just falls apart, and it happens over and over and over again, no matter what kind of form it takes.
Well, it's because they can't recapture Mr. McMahon and Stone Cold, which is what I think they want.
True.
And you can kind of see them trying that with Laurinaitis and Punk.
Yeah, but trying that and also keeping a somewhat G, maybe PG rating.
Yeah.
And it's not the same, you know. And I know that's a lame excuse because creativity is creativity no matter what the rating is.
Yeah.
But it's just, they're trying to do it the same way when they need to go and find a new formula for it and let Punk be Punk.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, honestly, I'm okay with it as long as they're going somewhere. And it's not to the point where, you know, because it's a soap opera, they can take their time with it. I don't mind having to wait the, you know, couple of months before this pays off. It just needs to pay off.
Yeah, so. And I mean, they kind of hinted at it tonight, but I'm pretty sure they're going to have Laurinaitis get in the ring at some point.
Yeah.
And show off his sweet moves.
It'll be, yeah.
He better grow a mullet for it, too.
I hope he brings his skateboard back.
Skateboard, mullet, the half t-shirts. Oh, that would be fantastic.
I tell you, that would be the payoff I'd be waiting for.
Oh, yeah. I'm right there with you.
But Laurinaitis comes to the ring. Then Punk comes and they have words.
And this promo seemed just to go really awkward. You know, it seemed like neither one of them really knew what to say.
Yeah, this was not the night for promos.
It really wasn't.
I gotta say, we'll get to some more in a few minutes, but yeah, this kind of set the scene for a less than stellar batch of promos to take place.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like, hey, Laurinaitis, we don't really have anything, but here's what we have planned, so kind of build that up. And Punk, yeah. We don't really have anything for you, so just try to play off Laurinaitis and do your thing. And just, you know, scooted him out to the ring, and Punk was just like, okay, hi, you suck, I guess?
Yeah.
Sure, let's go with that.
I mean, what it ended up in is Punk was assigned a 3-on-1 gauntlet match where the winner would get to challenge Punk for a title shot, and if Punk won, Laurinaitis would have to get in the ring. And so we're getting ready to go to our first match when the mysterious January 2nd again interrupts the feed with their creepy vignette of children.
And basically all it does is just confirm, hey, we're going to be there next Monday. See you then.
These have been the least helpful of the vignettes, the return vignettes that WD may have ever done. You remember last year when Undertaker was coming back? And by this time, it was just pictures of the Undertaker?
Yep.
So, maybe those kids are actually coming. Maybe they're going to be the world's youngest wrestlers.
I knew it. So are you standing by any of your predictions from you made last week?
I don't know if they're predictions because...
Or hopeful holdouts or whatever.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, the more I think about it, the more I would really like Shane McMahon to come back.
I got to admit that situation that you laid out last week was pretty just perfect.
Yeah.
And I would really enjoy seeing that. And I know it's not a wrestling storyline, but it would be interesting to watch.
Yeah. It's very much it's a storyline that I would be invested in, and it's not a prediction because I don't hold out much hope for it happening. But again, there's nothing to base predictions on. As far as stuff WWE has given you, any predictions that you see are all thanks to internet rumors and you know, third hand hearing stuff from the guy who brings coffee to the guy who mops up the floor, or the who overheard something in a locker room 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, but it's the last Raw. It'll happen next week, and we'll be either really excited about it or really upset about it.
or it'll be one of the situations where it happens, we look at each other, shrug our shoulders, be like, okay, well, what now? And again, with knowing WWE, that just might be the more likely case.
So, as we get back to intentional WWE feed, it's Cody Rhodes and Booker T. Which, Booker T has been in the ring a lot recently.
Yeah, and it's... You know, we got word that this is going to be a pretty good-sized feud for the two of them.
Yeah.
And it's good to see Booker in the ring sometimes, lets you know that he's not completely incompetent as a human being.
I mean, he still has ring skills.
Oh, definitely.
There's no question about that. He lost
a step or two, but, I mean, at that age, what do you expect?
Yeah, but he put on a perfectly good, middle-of-the-show Raw match.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot worse matches on TV this year.
And he, made a lot less botches than Sin Cara, so everyone's happy.
Yeah. So, I'd rather have him back in the ring than on commentary.
Oh, I agree. I could I could definitely go for just some Josh Matthews and maybe some Michael Cole, and that's okay, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is Michael Cole is, you know, there's King and there's Booker T who antagonize Michael Cole to make him worse than he already is.
Right.
So.
But I mean, okay, with JR out of the picture, Raw's back to a two commentator show, so I feel like SmackDown should do the same.
Yeah.
You know, just for some balance. And just, you know, because I feel bad for Josh Matthews. You know, he just
Josh
seems...
Josh tries so hard.
He tries so hard to be the straight man and try to call everything down the middle and do his job, but... And he's surrounded by two just cartoon characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I almost feel bad for him now as I did during those horrible fake suicide attempt
videos. Suicide videos?
Yeah.
That
wasn't wise.
Oh.
Which is what I'm really hoping turns in. I'm hoping something like that happens with Big Show.
Big Show just goes into a spiraling depression.
Yep, because he's has the shortest title reign for the World Heavyweight Championship. And he just, you know, does things that aren't wise.
The thing is, now that there's a SmackDown Money in the Bank,
mm-hmm.
that's not going to stay the shortest championship. Like, that's going to be a record that gets broken.
Oh, yeah.
I have no doubt about that. Because, the only other one was when Kane cashed in last year, and he cashed in on somebody who successfully defended.
Right. And see, that's the way it's always been. Like, they've always cashed in on someone who just won or just, you know, regained their championship.
Yeah.
Or someone who got beat up. There was never a situation where the title just changed hands.
Yeah. So, it'll happen. Big Show just has to wait it out.
So. And just keep away from unwise things.
our next segment is Laurinaitis and Otunga backstage, where John Laurinaitis is on the phone with Brodus Clay saying that he's finally going to debut next week on the first Raw of 2012.
Which you never know that whole It Begins vignette
If he's the It Begins vignette, so I'm going to be so upset.
I would be up for that.
No, I'm not willing to,
really?
To accept that.
You wouldn't be okay with it?
No, I would not be okay with it. Well, because there's no build up to me for Brodus Clay. I've only ever seen him as Del Rio's, you know, hitman.
Right.
So I'm not excited to see Brodus Clay back in the ring. I'm interested in it, but I'm not excited for it.
And I mean, we've heard word that, you know, WWE really wants to emphasize Brodus Clay's, you know, re-debut, and they're picking the perfect spot for it. And see, to be honest with you, we had those Brodus Clay vignettes months ago, and then those stopped, and then we got the It Begins stuff. So, you know, that might be a legit thought to have, that it might be Brodus Clay.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. It would not be my favorite result.
And to be honest with you, as far as the actual message of the videos, it wouldn't make any sense, because what is he coming back to claim? He hasn't done anything.
He's lost nothing.
Exactly.
So
I don't know. Food for thought. Whatever.
Well, but the point of the segment is Otunga, Big Show are going to be in a match with Big Show's right hand tied behind his back.
Waka waka.
So, you know, gimmick matches. And then we get a gimmick match. Eve Torres, Zack Ryder, Tyson Kidd, Natalya.
If they try to hook Zack Ryder and Eve up, I'm going to just puke. I'm sorry, I cannot stand Eve at all. She just seems just bland and boring. And that is not Zack Ryder.
Here's the greatest part of that entire match.
Okay, throw it on me.
After Eve Torres and Zack Ryder win, and they're celebrating in the ring,
and she throws up the fist and he ignores her.
She throws up the fist and he goes to get his belt, and she chases him across the ring with her fist outstretched.
Hey, man, a man's got to have his priorities.
So,
oh, yeah, I caught that.
It was worth it for the entire match.
Oh yeah, just to see that shining moment. Get dissed.
So
we got to see, God, what's his name?
Tyson?
Yeah, we got to see him with some hair.
Yeah.
Like regular people hair. I thought he was somebody else for a second. I thought it was The Miz, actually. Because I was watching it late, so I was going through the DVR, so I was just kind of skipping through that because I really didn't want to watch it.
Yeah.
And I just saw that he was wrestling someone with hair and had the tights and everything, and I was like, is that The Miz? And sure enough, it was the tiny little man known as Tyson.
Because he doesn't have his trademark three-pronged hair.
Three-pronged hair.
So next up, we got John Cena coming out. Everybody boos.
Of course.
And he starts off calling out Kane. Because these guys haven't really exchanged words yet. They've just exchanged
punches.
But
first, he sucks up to Chicago to get some, some face momentum back.
Yeah.
And it kind of works a little bit.
It does.
So, hey, you people want to badmouth, Chicago people. We are forgiving.
Yeah.
By and large, we are forgiving people.
as long as you're not actively against CM Punk.
Or if your name isn't Steve Bartman, we will never forgive that man, but that's another story.
All right.
Joel has no idea what I'm talking about.
No.
For
no.
anyone listening. Exactly. And that makes me cry a little bit.
It must be other sports.
Exactly, Joel.
Next up, we get The Miz. The Miz comes out.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I really did love some Miz and John Cena early part of this year.
Yeah.
So I would be glad for a revisit for that.
Well, it's interesting because early this year, it felt like a main event match.
Oh, definitely.
Miz, John Cena felt like a match. And now it feels a little bit like a mid-carder yelling at a main eventer again. Because Miz had a rough year. He's just now starting to build back up momentum.
True. Yeah, once he lost that title, he kind of went back a few notches.
Yeah.
But, so, I mean, that's kind of natural for a guy who won the championship off of a Money in the Bank.
Off Money in the Bank, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, he didn't fall down that, like
no,
a Jack Swagger or anything like that.
And he's coming back, it feels.
Definitely. So, and I'm okay with that.
Okay, but we get an interruption. R-Truth is back.
R-Truth is back, and is he coming back as a face or a heel? Like,
I don't know. I'm really concerned he's not going to be all about the conspiracy anymore.
Or is WWE actually going to have a heel versus heel match?
No.
Which doesn't seem like
no.
anything they would ever do, just ever. And that would be really impressive. I would be very impressed with WWE if they ever actually did that.
I'll be so excited for that, but...
But no, it's probably not going to happen.
No. I hope they don't turn Truth face again.
No.
Because he was such a bland face.
He went from one extreme to another with me. Like, I hated him so much, and I wished every week that I heard that he got future endeavored when he was a face. But when he turned heel, I love the crap out of him. He's just so fun to listen to.
He is.
And it just shows you, some guys, when you turn them heel, it just gives them more to work with. And he was definitely one of those people. And now you just can't get enough of him.
Exactly. And so, I'm frantically listening throughout this whole promo and trying to decide if he's a face or heel. He said Little Jimmy, so
but
maybe...
he called Miz the Jimmy, though.
Yeah, and he didn't tell the audience to stop saying what. So
and they wanted him
they
pretty hard.
They wanted so hard. So, I don't know. I'm assuming we'll find out as the weeks roll on because we're going to get a full-blown Miz and Truth angle.
Yeah, and it just might be something that they just kind of like trade blows every now and then until the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Which
I would be okay with. I mean,
Yeah.
I'd if they didn't acknowledge it when he came back, I'd be complaining about that.
True, yeah. Because, I mean, we're always complaining about how WWE doesn't pay attention to any kind of continuity.
Yeah.
So I would. Yeah, you're right.
So I'm content with that.
Mm.
I just hope that they don't drop the best heel that they created this year.
Definitely.
To, for this.
Mm-hmm.
But, next up we have the aforementioned Big Show Dave Otunga match. And it goes on for
a few,
maybe a minute?
If that.
And so,
and then Big Boy Henry.
Mark Henry comes out and everybody kind of threatens to fight each other, doesn't quite. Mm-hmm. Daniel Bryan comes out
and threatens to fight someone, but doesn't.
But doesn't quite make it into the ring.
And then Big Show just takes it over from there.
Yep. Gets his arm free, choke slams Otunga.
It's weird. It's like Mark Henry and Big Show are like the still the main feud going on there, but both men have like these miniature feuds to the side. Like Mark Henry has this thing with Daniel Bryan, and Big Show for some reason has this thing against David Otunga. And it's just, it's weird. But I mean, that's SmackDown for you lately.
Yeah.
It's just,
Well, everybody has to have at least, you know, two feuds so that it's easy to mix and match for tag team matches.
Obviously.
You can't risk having a singles match on SmackDown.
Very true. So. Or you can go, like, again, you would think WWE would catch on after a while and be like, okay, we need to mix it up for a while. But nope, sure enough, had a main event between two guys, and it was a pretty decent match, and other people started getting involved, and all of a sudden, here comes Teddy Long. It's like, oh, I'm going to make this a tag team match, playa. And
oh, the end?
The end of SmackDown, yeah. And it's...
It was the farce, the parody of itself.
Exactly.
And like it's reached that point.
I cannot watch SmackDown live. I have to catch it later, and I have to just fast forward through stuff just to make sure I don't miss anything good or decent, because... I don't have the patience for it anymore.
I mean, SmackDown is the time that I check my email and, you know, browse the internet, because mm-hmm. it so offers itself for multitasking.
Definitely.
But we digress. Moving on, Del Rio comes out.
In a wheelchair.
And he's hurt.
Yeah, I guess that kind of went under the radar to me. Then again, I mean, I've had a crazy week, so I haven't heard anything that he got injured last week on Raw.
I don't remember him getting injured last week on Raw.
And so. I looked it up, and you know it is apparently legit, or at least so they're saying. And WWE.com is giving him about 4 to 6 weeks, so which isn't too bad.
Yeah,
which is okay because I think they're overdoing it with Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah, I'm a little Del Rio'd out.
Exactly, and I think we could all use a little break. From them.
So, Bella Twins come out at random and then bicker with each other?
Yeah, that's kind of been their running
shtick. They've kind of been doing that, and they can't have a Bella Twin feud because I won't know who not to cheer for.
Unless one of them, like, cuts their hair or dyes it a different color or wears a different freaking outfit.
There's nothing.
I wonder if twins ever get offended by twin cliches that they always have to wear the same things. I don't know. I've only known, like, one set of twins my entire life, and I don't really talk to them much anymore. I just knew them in high school, so.
Did they wear the same clothes every day?
Not at all.
You buy their clothes in bulk?
No, they pretty much dressed and acted completely different, and I was one of the people, like, I was one of the few people who could actually tell them apart.
Well,
but
don't let WWE hear that.
Oh, apparently not. Yeah.
So, and then we have our gauntlet match, which is not the main event for some reason. I mean, it's the last match of the night,
right?
But
you know, far be it for me to you know expect CM Punk to have the main event. You know, he's only your WWE champion in the hometown.
He's your champion in his hometown.
Oh yeah.
In one of the cities that's the most passionate about their favorite son of wrestling.
Yeah.
And so...
But again, it would make too much sense.
I guess maybe because he was going to lose. Like, that's the only...
Yeah, they didn't want to end it on that note.
Not only grain of thought I can see in not putting the gauntlet match at the end. But, he loses to Ziggler, which is honestly what I was hoping for. The contestants were Swagger, Ziggler, and then Mark Henry.
Right. Who already got a chokeslam from Big Show that night.
Yeah.
And so that should tell you right there what was going to happen.
I was hoping for Ziggler, because that means CM Punk and Dolph Ziggler are going to fight next week.
And I'm okay with that.
And they probably had the best, you know, Raw match last year, or this year, 2011.
Yeah, I can get behind that, yeah.
Their match, maybe about a month ago now?
Something like that, sure.
Was probably the best, quote-unquote, free match of the year. So, then we end up, our final event of the night is Kane coming out to respond to Cena.
With a very, very philosophical kind of...
Yeah.
Like, he was using some pretty fancy big words there. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. Glenn Jacobs is an intelligent man. And any interview you've ever heard with him, he will talk you up and down about anything and everything. And it's almost a shame that he was hiding behind the mask and not saying a word for all those years, you know? But it just seemed odd. And
this is nothing against the person who plays the character, Kane.
No. It's just... That
seemed weird for Kane.
It did, and it seemed to be an odd direction for him. I get what he was saying, and I understand the intent behind it, but they could have, you know, simplified it a little bit. And it's always awkward whenever he's making one of those kind of promos, and then they cut to random people in the audience.
Yeah.
You know, especially when he's talking about, you know, people being deceived and people being misled, and then they cut to people right at that moment. He's like, oh, well, that guy was deceived, or that kid, he's all sad, he's been lied to. And it's just, it's awkward to look at their faces at that point.
It was a weird promo, because it's not exactly about the, you know, fiery doom and I like sick and twisted things that Kane usually is about.
It was very
directed at Cena,
and it was very rational
and against the Cena philosophy,
right?
Which reminds me a little bit of everybody who's ever been mad at Cena.
True.
So for the past 6 years since he's been the face, but really big the Batista feud right before Batista left, where this guy was specifically angry at Cena. And Kane has this little more philosophical, you know, higher calling kind of beef with Cena now. But,
true.
It is. It's.
I'm sorry. I can't. I can never. Me and you've had this discussion. I can't take Batista seriously ever when he has a belly button tattoo. Just saying.
Well, I'm sure somewhere Batista's crying over that rash tattooing decision.
You're right, he better. God, he deserves it for having that dumb tattoo. But anyways, I liked the promo. I did.
I don't know if I did. I haven't decided yet.
The thing is, it lost a lot of its gas when he tried to force the Cena sucks chant, and it didn't really happen. I mean, we got the whole Let's Go Cena, Cena Sucks thing eventually, but it seemed like ages before that actually started. And I feel like they kind of took a gamble on relying on the audience at that point in time.
The thing is, you know, we've both talked about before that Cena is already a heel in the sense that he's getting, you know, so much booze. But I feel that it's, you know, it's probably a lot closer to half and half than we're willing to admit. Just the Cena naysayers are a lot more vocal about it, since the company is already pushing Cena so much.
True.
You know, those who have to go against it have to be a lot louder.
Yeah, but I guess now we know why they started selling the Cena Suck shirts, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, they're not, you know, they didn't get a crowd to fully go against Cena.
Which, to be honest with you, they really... They should have they should have anticipated that they would have booed him, because it was Chicago, and the last time they were there, Cena got just
Yeah. That, I mean, Cena's never been booed as much as he was at Money in the Bank.
Exactly. And I think they were anticipating that same reaction. They weren't expecting it to be half and half like that.
Yeah.
So I can't really fault them for that, because if I was in their position and I was planning something like that, I would have that same thinking. I would have that same logic, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, if it's it was a surprisingly rational train of thought to get this. If there's a crowd that you can get an entire crowd to turn against Cena,
mm-hmm.
Chicago is probably a good place. Yep. But the thing is, they didn't. And so are they going to let that, you know, are they going to take that into consideration when it's getting more and more clear that they're really pushing this, you know, the boos are getting to Cena storyline.
Right.
Whether that turns Cena heel or not, we don't know yet. But in this one instance, Cena got a lot more support than he was supposed to get. And so...
And that was just the only thing that killed it for me.
Yeah.
But other than that, I liked the promo fine.
Well, it was a weird thing to end on because...
Yeah.
There was no response from Cena. It was just Cena standing there.
I would have liked it better if they had done all of this in the 10 o'clock hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, find some other way for R-Truth to gang up on Miz.
Yeah.
But to end the show like that, it's just, I don't know. Just
It ended the show on an awkward beat. And not a bad beat or a mess up, but...
Just kind of in the middle, meh kind of thing.
Yeah. So
Happy New Year?
That's how they... Yeah. That's how 2011 ends for Raw.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing that this is a weekly show. We can pick right back up next week.
A very weekly show.
That's what's important.
You see what I did there? Puns.
You're so punny. But we'll move on now.
Let's move on.
Because it is the end of the year. We felt that it was time for some awards. Slammies have already happened. We've spoken about the Slammies, but
who cares about the Slammies?
These are the ones that matter, the classies.
Ba-ba-da!
And so
that's the official noise of the
noise,
the classies.
Mm-hmm. So we'll pick up. Usually, even though we haven't done these before, mm-hmm. but. Usually we would save Superstar of the Year for the end. It's the big award. But this year, because I feel there's so little mystery as to who it's going to be.
Definitely. And I have a feeling we're both going to agree on this.
Yeah, we're going to go and do Superstar of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Push that one out of the way. So here we go.
So wait, are we going to do like a 3-2-1 thing?
For this one, let's do 3-2-1.
All right.
All right, you ready? 3-2-1.
Primo.
CM Punk.
What? No, it's CM Punk.
Of course it's CM Punk.
I mean, what is there to say here? I mean, it just...
Do you remember in June when we thought CM Punk was going to... Like, before CM Punk started saying on Raw that he was going to leave,
when
we were hearing backstage rumors that CM Punk was going to leave?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, it's mind-boggling to think where we would have been if CM Punk wasn't a part of the WWE anymore.
Definitely. And to be honest with you, at that time, I can still remember how I felt about it. My standing on it was, well, you know, it's a shame, and I would hate to see him go, but if he's not being used, why keep him, you know?
Yeah.
I would rather see him go somewhere else, anywhere else, and be used and, you know, give his the chance that he's, you know, rightfully owed.
Well, he was a guy back then who I really liked.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who I liked enough that I would have followed his career specifically, even if it wasn't a part of the WWE.
Definitely.
But now that it is, and now that he's such a big part of it, because July onward, CM Punk was the best at everything.
Pretty much.
Because he was the most entertaining in ring, he was the most mm-hmm. entertaining on mic. He was the most entertaining of the commentators.
Oh, God, yeah.
He had the best t-shirt of the year.
Definitely.
He had the best internet meme of the year. Like, everything is... everything anybody does in that business, he does the same thing better.
Fill me in on this internet meme.
Punking? It's like planking, but you just sit cross-legged in random places.
How did I not know about this?
I don't know.
Dude, send me links, sir. I have something to look at all night.
It's so much better than planking.
Well, I mean, planking is just so mainstream now. Yes, I'm a hipster about planking.
You got to get cool and start punking.
Exactly. Now, I mean, now that Tebow's gone mainstream, can't do Tebowing anymore. God.
But, so, that's the, it's just, it's, there's no question about it. And every match that Punk had July onward, every pay-per-view match, is probably a contender for a top 10 list.
Oh, definitely.
Some of his matches on Raw are contenders for a top 10 list.
Mm-hmm.
He had the best match at WrestleMania, and that was before all this.
And he lost that one.
I know, it's...
You know, and he basically was just to make Randy Orton look good. And he did.
Yeah.
He made Randy Orton look pretty near impressive.
He jobs better than anybody else on the roster. He wins better than anybody else on the roster.
I don't know about that. Dolph Ziggler sells pretty well.
Dolph Ziggler sells something amazing.
Dolph Ziggler could sell a gentle hug.
Dolph Ziggler could sell CM Punk drugs.
That was beautiful, sir. Oh, I have to remember that. Joel, get on Twitter right now and just say that.
I have to wait for it to be so they can put it down at the bottom so Michael Cole can read my tweet to the world.
Right on.
All right, moving on.
Can we add a category here and just put the classiest saying of the year and put that, and that just wins every year?
Works for me.
Right on.
Classiest saying of the year goes to Joe Leonard.
I'm jealous of you that I didn't think of that.
I'd like to accept this award on behalf of Dolph Ziggler.
Fair enough.
All right. Moving onward.
All right,
here we go. The match of the year. Your match of the year, Chris?
Well, you gonna make me go first?
I'll make you go first.
You're not gonna know what to expect on this one.
All right.
Vengeance.
Vengeance. Okay.
Vengeance. John Cena, Alberto Del Rio on the Broken Ring. For some reason, I love that match, you know? And, of course, it didn't have the same feel, because I know what you're going to say, and it didn't have the same feel as that match. And, you know, the situation wasn't as intense and the stakes weren't as high, but I loved it, and I loved the improv that they did with that.
Yeah.
You know, and they still, I think they put on a very good match, and from there, I could actually start tolerating Alberto Del Rio in the ring.
Yeah.
So.
I mean,
I go with Shock and Awe on this one.
It definitely helped that it was already a false count anywhere match, but
yeah,
it was a good match. I will agree to that. And it was a match that it already felt like the highlight of the pay-per-view had happened,
mm-hmm.
and they still managed to put on a match very much worth watching. So
that was Vengeance, right? I'm not just making that up.
That was Vengeance. Okay. Yes.
Just making sure.
So
all right, Joel, what's your pick?
I'm going with the more obvious one. A lot of people agree with it. It's the John Cena CM Punk Money in the Bank match.
Right on.
And it's, you know, beyond the fact that it was just a great, solid 30-plus minutes of wrestling,
mm-hmm.
it was a build-up.
It was the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Build-up like you never expected. The crowd was so invested in this match.
They hung on every move and every word and everything.
It was awe-inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the very few times where I had no idea who was going to win.
Definitely.
You know, usually you can, once you've watched enough wrestling, you know how the storylines work.
Mm-hmm.
You know when somebody's going to win. You know not. And it was one that I just... I couldn't tell either way. So it was like watching unscripted fighting. You know, each pin felt like it could be the pin.
Mm-hmm. My only thing is I hate the way that it ended. I hate that it was John Cena had his back turned because he was too focused on Vince McMahon and Laurinaitis, and then that's how CM Punk got the win.
Yeah.
You know, I would have liked it better if CM Punk just pinned John Cena cleanly, because, again, no one has done that in years, you know?
Well, I think back then, Punk was still technically a heel.
Right. And I know that they're not going to let Cena lose cleanly to anyone, but...
Not before The Rock.
True. I feel like that would have made the moment so much better.
If that exact same match took place next July, I believe they would let Cena lose cleanly.
Oh yeah. So, oh yeah.
It was an atmosphere at the time where they Cena was still in such a strong Super Cena mode that they couldn't let it. But it was just every moment of that match was spot on perfect for me. So
fair enough.
I'm gonna give it that. Our next category is the face or heel turn of the year.
Joel, how about you go first on this one?
All right, I'll go first.
I'm interested to hear what you say.
There's two big ones, but I'm gonna give this one to R-Truth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we agree on this one.
Because we've already spoken about it earlier in this very podcast.
Mm-hmm. No, it just seemed this heel turn, it changed the face of R-Truth's career in the WWE.
Exactly.
Like with CM Punk, he turned because the fans just kind of wanted it. And, you know, he came back anyway, so it's not like he was going to lose a job or anything. But I felt like R-Truth, this was just a act of desperation to just try to get some sort of reaction out of the crowd. And it just struck gold. And once they saw what they had, they just kept on with it, and it just got better and better for me.
The thing is, it's such an entertaining character.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's a character I had no expectations of.
No, and it's something we haven't seen, and something different.
And if you pitched it to me now, you know, hey, here's a wrestler who thinks that the company's against him, who thinks that he can't catch a break, I wouldn't be invested in that.
No.
I mean, I would be as I would any other wrestler, but yeah, R-Truth does just, that to such perfection.
Exactly. It depends on who it is and how they go about doing it. Because Miz pretty much went with the same thing, and he made it work a little bit, but it just wasn't the same as R-Truth now, you know.
Yeah. I mean, R-Truth is easily one of the most entertaining ones of the year.
I can get behind that.
All right, next up is the most improved of the year. Your turn.
I am going to go with... it's between two guys, and I keep going back and forth on the two. I'm going to have to go with Cody Rhodes.
Okay.
You know, here's a guy who... He went through that whole mask phase at the beginning of the year, and at that point, he was getting decent heat from the fans with his dashing promos and everything. And, you know, you put him up against Rey Mysterio on SmackDown with all the kids there, you know, and he's definitely going to get some sort of reaction from the little ones.
Yeah.
And I mean, you put anyone up against Rey Mysterio, and I'm going to root for the other person, but that's just me. Just seems like the masks and that persona just really added to his mic skills and the overall interestingness of his storylines. It just seemed to add a new flavor to it. Yeah. And now that he doesn't have the mask, he still has that ability, and he just keeps going, and he's fantastic in the ring. And he's just compelling to watch now. And I'm not saying that he didn't have that last year, but it just seems like he has more momentum and more of a swagger about him.
Okay. All right, yeah. That's, I mean, he's had a stellar year.
Mm-hmm.
My most improved is Dolph Ziggler.
He was the other guy that I was thinking of.
I figured he must be, because at the beginning of this year, Dolph Ziggler got a very quick little main event tease.
Yeah.
And at that time, it felt like he wasn't ready. It felt mm-hmm. like a mid-carder getting a shot that he didn't know what to do with. And now, by the end of the year, it feels like he belongs in the main event. And it's the thing is, he spent most of the year with the United States Championship. And defending that again and again and again, it slowly started to look like it was an impressive belt. It wasn't just the slapdash belt it had become. And so I think he brought a level of prestige back to the United States Championship.
Mm-hmm.
This new show-off aspect of his character mm-hmm. is really, really entertaining. The doing a handstands and doing sit-ups in the ring kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's so much more entertaining. He's really mastered his mic work.
That's the biggest improvement I've seen with him. Yeah.
Increased tenfold. He knows how to get heat now. He needed Vicky at the beginning of this mm-hmm. year.
Because he struggled.
Yeah, and he doesn't anymore.
No, sir.
He's learned how to be a heel.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably about halfway through the year, he had a match with John Cena. He had a little tiny mini feud with John Cena.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on commentary, and he was this very cordial commentator. He was, well, John Cena's a good wrestler, and I'm gonna do my best, and he's gonna do his best, and we'll fight like gentlemen, and we'll shake hands,
and there's,
like, that's not a heel.
WWE doesn't want that crap. I mean, you have to, just go for the juggler if you're a heel.
It's not entertaining,
Yeah.
It's what people actually say when they're trying to respect their opponents.
Exactly. And there's no need for respecting opponents in the WWE.
And
when you brought up, he brought up a little bit of class and some dignity back to the U.S. Championship. A lot can be said about Cody Rhodes doing that with the Intercontinental Championship now.
No, I agree. These people are actually making these mid-card titles valuable.
Which is something that I've been looking forward to. Like, that was a main complaint of mine when they had, they just threw the belt on Kofi Kingston for like the millionth time just to put someone on it. And
it's really upsetting.
You would forget about it for like a couple months.
Yeah,
you couldn't even remember who had what belt.
Yeah. And it's a sad thing to those belts because, you'll see these, replays of, like around SummerSlam time,
mm-hmm.
they'll replay these matches and you see what these wrestlers went through to win the Intercontinental Championship.
Yep.
And now, it's put on the line for like coin tosses and,
pretty much.
It's just, it's shuffled around so much. Both of these men have worked really hard to bring that, that level of integrity back to mm-hmm. these titles. And of course, Dolph Ziggler sells like he thinks he's in the main event of WrestleMania every night.
Dolph Ziggler apparently can sell CM Punk drugs.
Yep.
That's just going to be the period of that.
his commitment is beautiful.
Yeah.
Next, we're going to do the feud of the year. Is it my turn to go first?
You started.
All right. This one I had some trouble with. I went through a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because, the one I picked, it's not a perfect feud. It has problems, and I know it has problems, but there is no perfect feud, I feel.
Don't say it.
Yeah.
Don't say it.
Yeah, it is. It's gonna be Randy Orton and Christian.
Okay, that's better than what I thought you were gonna say.
What do you think I was gonna say?
Rock and Cena.
Oh, not Rock and Cena.
I was going to boo you. Don't get me wrong, I hated that feud. It just drug on. It just,
here's the thing,
went on forever, and I
did,
just had
and
enough
and I,
of it.
I know it went too long, mm-hmm. but that's the only problem with it, is the length of it, because it didn't grow.
I'm sorry, I had a "that's what she said" moment.
I realized it as soon as I said it.
But, I mean, that's the one time, that's the one thing she wouldn't say, though. Mm-hmm. The problem was the length. Sorry, go on.
The problem was how long the feud was, but the feud didn't grow boring. Because the matches didn't grow boring. The feud grew did not grow boring.
I can agree with that.
Continually put out great matches. The fact that it started as a face versus face feud, which we almost never get anymore.
Yeah.
So to watch these matches, they're different matches. They're, you know, a face versus face match is a different style match than a face versus feud match or a face versus heel match.
Very true.
And to see these two guys be able to put on stellar matches of both of them, it was impressive. The ending match, their final match at SummerSlam,
mm-hmm.
felt like a feud ending match. So many of these feuds just kind of fizzle out because it's time for one of the wrestlers to go on to a new feud.
Yeah.
But this match felt like it ended something. Christian went through, I think, 3 tables in one match. And they tore the match open. And so,
but you know who the biggest winner of that feud was?
Who?
The Spanish announce table.
That would not sell for anybody.
Nope. Nope, nope, nope. That Spanish announce table stood proud and defiant of God's will.
I'd forgotten about that Spanish announce table. They had to get a new one. Made out of balsa wood.
Perfect.
All right, what's your feud of the year, sir?
All right, see, the thing is, you think of, because every year there's one, maybe two long-standing feuds of the year. And really there was, of the ones that I can think of, there's really 3. There's Cena and Rock,
mm-hmm.
Orton and Christian, and Big Show and Mark Henry.
Yeah.
Those just seem to be the long-standing feuds. And you know what? My feud of the year is none of those. I will take you back all the way to the beginning of the year. And my feud of the year is John Cena and The Miz. Like leading up to WrestleMania, Miz put on some of the best promos I've ever seen him put together. And that made me want to see more of The Miz. You know, we got Miz impersonating to be The Rock, which is kind of hokey, but you know what? Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and we got things as simple as Miz turning the WWE symbol upside down, you know,
uh-huh.
and doing that on the belt as well. And, you know, yeah, the matches weren't fantastic because, you know, you basically got a match between a rock and a limp noodle.
Yeah.
So, you know, but as far as, like, the interest factor in it, like you said earlier, it felt like such a big event feel to it.
Yeah.
Leading into WrestleMania. And to this day, I love the intro that Miz got.
That Miz had?
For WrestleMania. And even John Cena. John Cena had a really good intro. The video, not so much the choir.
Yeah.
You know. And well, I just felt like that just had such a big, just stage. It had a huge stage for that. And they set it up perfectly, you know. And, of course, it kind of sucked the way it ended, that because it involved The Rock just inserting himself like he has the entire year.
Yeah.
But other than that, I loved it.
It's very much, I agree. The video, the promo video before Miz's entrance is the best promo video in recent memory.
Definitely.
If not in long memory.
And to be honest with you, that mixed in with the inflatable awesome, probably my favorite WrestleMania moment from that year. Now, that's not saying much about the WrestleMania in general.
Yeah, it wasn't the best WrestleMania, but
but that moment, I just felt like, you know what, how big of a moment is this for Miz, like, to go full circle like that, you know, starting from a crappy reality show, and now you're main eventing, doing exactly what you've always dreamed of, you know?
Yes.
And I just thought that was just the biggest thing for me. And maybe I'm confusing that with our other category for best spot, but that just, I don't know. It just,
I mean,
it resonated with me for some reason, you know?
I'll give it to you. It was a great feud. Definitely. And it was overshadowed by The Rock.
And I feel like that was just the biggest shame of that whole thing, is that they didn't let it play out organically, and they just had to have The Rock insert himself.
Yeah. So, but all right, I'll give that one to you. Mm-hmm. You make a good argument.
And another thing, and it's a point that I made back when this happened. You had The Miz, and the only reason he did all these crazy, you know, and zany things is because he felt like he was getting overlooked, and he got, you know, just passed on during the whole Rock Cena thing, and yeah. It felt like people were just forgetting about him. So he was like, you know what? I'm not going to let you forget about me, and I'm just going to keep coming up like that pesky little punk that I am.
Yeah.
And I thought that was brilliant.
I mean, I thought it was a real, you know, moment for Miz. It felt like he belonged in the main event scene. Mm-hmm.
That was the big breaking moment for me with him.
All right, next up is the most underrated of the year.
I'm not too sure about this pick, but I'm still going to go with it. Because I guess this past episode of Raw kind of null and voided this. But my most underrated person was going to be Dolph Ziggler, you know, because he just he sells so fantastically, and he's been on the mid card for forever. He got a brief stint last year at the main event with Edge, and since then he kind of faded around and just stuck with mid cards ever since then. And
yeah,
he's got such great talent, and he's just such a good, like, overall superstar at this point. So yeah. I feel like, you know, and now we're starting to see him getting kind of pushed towards the main event, and just kind of give him a good little, you know, push him out in the water and see if he swims kind of thing.
Yeah. My most underrated was, I had to think about this one for a while too, but I settled on Evan Bourne because, here's the thing. They're kind of pushing this air boom thing, but it hasn't taken off as any kind of revamp of the tag team titles.
Do you know why?
It's Evan Bourne's fault. Oh, because it's a terrible name?
Yep.
Yeah.
All because of the name. And I don't really like Kofi.
Well, that's the thing is, Kofi has, to me, attempted and failed to be a main event star.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he has the mic skills, yet, to have any kind of real main event.
Regardless of what accent he has.
So he's pretty solidly stuck. I don't think Evan Bourne's been given a chance. Briefly, I think actually last year, he had a kind of a, you know, first steps towards the top. He teamed up with John Cena a little bit. He had a decent feud with Chris Jericho.
Right.
But this year he's kind of floundered around. And
yeah, and see, the thing is, with him, he just seems like he's so injury prone.
Yeah.
You know, and every time he starts getting any kind of momentum, he'll get hurt and be shot on the shelf for forever.
He's very much a risk taker.
True.
And I mean, he's, you know, because he's a high flyer. And
I know me and you have disagreed on him quite a bit, but I just see Evan Bourne the same way I view Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara and guys like that, because I just see them as, you know, circus performers almost. You know, they do their whole Tumblr stuff and acrobatics, and I mean, I don't consider them real wrestlers. They just flip around a lot, you know.
Yeah.
That just might be me, though.
That's just you.
Fair enough.
Well, you prick. I do think Evan Bourne has, I don't know if he has potential because they haven't given him a mic other than to smile and throw up the victory sign.
I still think he should be a Mario character.
Well, the thing is, you know, part of the reason he hasn't been used is because he got suspended for 30 days.
Smoking the ganja.
Yeah, that totally, you know, killed any momentum that the tag team had going for it. So,
true.
Part of it's his own fault. Not going to deny that, but I think he has some in-ring skills that WWE is not utilizing.
Fair enough.
Our next category is the best spot of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Which for me was all the way back at the beginning, Royal Rumble, when John Morrison was knocked out of the ring.
Oh, why do you have to steal my answer?
Because to me, this is as obvious as CM Punk being Superstar of the Year.
Yeah.
Nothing else this year comes close to him Spider-Maning across the floor, climbing up the wall, balancing his way, and jumping back into the fight.
True. All right. Yeah.
And it's something that I know that there were backstage politics involved in it, uh-huh. but still stuns me that WWE let John Morrison go.
And see, it was the same thing a couple years ago when they let Shelton Benjamin go. Because they kept around basically for ladder matches because he was such a great athlete.
Yeah.
And that was his moment to shine. And, you know, they really missed out on that after they let him go. You know? I mean, but see, the thing is, you know, when it wasn't a ladder match, he was kind of terrible.
Yeah, well, the thing is, John Morrison was so close to breaking into the main event.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was still mid-card, but he was right on the tip. He had one of the better...
Wait, was he just the tip?
Just the tip.
Fair enough.
He had one of the better free matches on Raw, against Miz.
Yeah.
Not only did he have the best spot of the year, but the next three follow-ups also belonged to him. He had a great moment in the Elimination Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
A month later. It feels like if he was still with the company, he would have been my most underrated.
Yeah, yeah. So.
All right. Our final category...
Hold on. Oh, I didn't give you my answer, because since you used that one, I got a different one now.
Oh, you have a different one? You had a backup answer. Okay.
Yep. All right. Sheamus.
Okay.
And Beaker.
Sheamus and Beaker, best spot?
Best spot of the year. Close second, Sheamus putting Sin Cara through a ladder. Just because it's something I just want someone to do on a regular basis because I can't stand him. So there you go. That's my vengeful answer.
All right.
Since you took mine, you prick.
Because it was the answer. It was the correct factual answer this year.
Fine.
All right, our final category for the night.
And the biggest award and the most prestigious honor there is on the face of the planet.
The classiest wrestler.
You get it?
In the WWE.
Because
it's the classiest, yeah.
Classy ring attire.
All right. Classiest wrestler. Sir? Your selection?
My selection for classiest wrestler goes to a man who has a... First of all, he speaks the Queen's English.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, he dresses to impress. And he puts on the coat. He doesn't even put his sleeves on it because, you know what? He's too classy for the sleeves. He puts the coat over his shoulders and adds a little flower to it just to spice it up. I go with Wade Barrett.
Way
bow out. Way bow out.
Very well, sir.
Thank you.
But now for my answer.
For your answer.
He, too, speaks the King's English. The Queen's English.
I was about to see how long it took for you to notice that one.
He speaks both of the Englishes.
Oh, wow.
You may not have seen him much in the ring this year. That's because he's too classy for it. The man I'm talking about is one William Regal.
What?
Who has the name Regal. And so that's automatically half the points in the world.
What's your reasoning here? Come on.
So I understand if you don't watch NXT. I don't make a habit of it. But on occasion, I will watch the NXT where...
You brave soul.
Where William Regal is on commentary.
Which I feel like he should on one of the bigger shows.
Yeah. First of all, he is a great commentator. And if you need a wrestler to be a commentator now, William Regal is the one that should be doing it.
Exactly.
He's so entertaining, and he has an accent. He sounds so classy as he talks about mostly naked men slamming into each other. And makes it sound like tea time conversation.
Fair enough. I can get behind that in his Kings and Queens English.
So that's my classiest wrestler of the year award.
Right on. You know what? Yeah. I give you a healthy huzzah, sir.
Huzzah.
Huzzah.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for us. And that is it for the year.
That is it.
We have made it through another year of wrestling.
Yes, sir. Happy New Year, Joel.
Happy New Year.
Right on.
And we will see you back here next week to find out who is debuting on Raw, hopefully besides Curtis Blow.